Yep. Money is good. Yep. Let me tell you that. Money is good. And personally, I'm going to try and help you make sure that the money goes into your pocket and not into the person that is basically licensing your artwork, your book, your computer game, your intellectual property of any nature, shape, or form. We're going to kind of talk about what you should expect. We're going to also talk about if you... How many people have entered into some type of licensing royalty agreement already? One. Okay. How many people are hoping they're going to be entering into a licensing royalty agreement very soon? Okay, we got a couple more. First, let me say that entertainment lawyers are important for the industry. They know a lot of provisions that they need to put into a licensing royalty agreement. They lack something, and the something they lack is that they don't understand, or they go under a premise, which I can never understand, that whoever you have entered into an agreement with is going to pay you the correct amount of money. Usually, that's incorrect. And it's because not of a maliciousness about the company, but it's just that the company is potentially not as astute or putting a lot of money into their back office to make sure you get paid the amount of money, which means that you're going to have to hire an accountant, because if you hire a lawyer, you're really not going to get any money. You'll pay the lawyer's fees. So you're going to end up hiring an accountant, and the accountant's going to take your contract. And based on your contract, he's going to go, and that's what's going to determine what he can do in that audit to make sure that you're being paid a correct amount of money. I just finished two audits, and I'm in the middle of a third, which I'm going to talk about real quick here. The first audit was an audit between a game publisher and a game publisher, a computer game publisher, and a musician. The musician had copyrighted his musical score. The game publisher licensed it, put it on four games. You know, it was a nice piece of music. And we went in doing, it was myself and another firm, went in doing a very cursory audit of this, and we'll discuss what a cursory, very, you know, kind of scrape the teeth, but don't run up the accounting fees. Yeah, that's let's get it down here. Keep the accountants poor. It took us about 3 weeks. The publisher was not exactly what I would say cooperative. We discovered $1 million of underpayment, which means, by the way, that the publisher has to pay my fee, and we'll get into that part. I was very happy about that. Of course, I haven't seen the money yet, but that's a different issue. We went back to the musician or the business manager of the musician, and we said, look, you know, they agree that they're $1 million understated. Would you like to go to the next step, a more intense audit? And the business manager pretty much said, no, we're very happy you found us $1 million. And, you know, my statement was, with the other accounting firm, it was two accounting firms. I consider myself an accounting firm. I'm a very large, I'm an overweight person. You know, they were real, you know, they had more bodies. Me, I call him my wife, you know, that's the way it is. And, you know, we said, you know, we really didn't go into issues like international versus domestic sales, because there are usually royalty differences between U.S. and international. We didn't have the time. We couldn't do that. But we would love to do that, and we think we're going to find you a hell of a lot more money. And the guy basically said, will you guarantee that we'll find you more money? And I can't guarantee, because then I'm not independent. So I'm sitting there saying, no, I can't guarantee. And he said, sure, I'll take my $1 million. And we closed that audit. The next audit we had was, we had a, again, somehow I got a batch of musicians this year, you know, they flow. He had formed a joint venture with a very renowned record company. And therefore, there was no royalty agreement because they're a joint venture. And it was the record company 60%, the musician 40%. And we went in and said, well, look, we represent the musician. We need to take a look at the books and records because we'd like to see what's going on. And what had happened was we were refused. The record company said, no. I'm saying, wait a minute. You know, this isn't a royalty licensee agreement license. This is a combination, two people getting together to make some money. They said, well, that's why we didn't enter into a royalty licensee agreement. We entered into this business partnership. And in the business partnership, it specifically stated that the minority partner, i.e. the musician, did not have the right to audit the books and records. Whereupon we went to the entertainment attorney, right, and said, did you realize that you gave away the rights? And he said, well, you don't need rights. We're in the company was formed in the state of New York. In New York, it's state law that if you own 20% or more of a joint venture, you have an automatic right to audit the books and records. And we said, well, could you please tell them that? Because I'm not going to fight, you know, you don't put the accountant in the middle of two lawyers. And I'll tell you why. It's not that we're stupider. Okay. No. The issue is you're going to incur two fees instead of one. So why incur two? You know, take your one and be happy. And he came back and he called us back. He said, well, I don't interpret the paragraph that we put into that agreement as they're interpreting it, where I had the musician, I can't really use names, we'll call him the musician, give up his right to audit. And he said, let's litigate. And I looked at the musician, I said, call me. Because it probably, he did give it away and didn't realize it. So that, and by the way, I grabbed the accountant for this giant entity, and it's one of the three remaining very, very large accounting firms, and he said to expect more of this type of joint venture, because these type of joint ventures, they're all going to put this paragraph in, and if it gets past the other side, they're saying, you know, you could kick and scream, but we're going to pay, in essence, we're going to pay your client whatever the frig we want to pay and be happy. So I bring that to your attention in case you're into, you know, you get to a point where you start getting into these, all right, let's do a joint venture. And then this little giant red ball goes up, you know, and you're sitting there going, mayday, mayday, red alert, man the boats. But the issue here is that accountants can only do what lawyers have put into a paragraph. Oh, my third audit story. I'm sorry. We got called up by a UK band. And no, the Beatles no longer are a UK band, by the way. But I did work for them once. I guess that shows my age, huh? Ooh, ugly. I also did Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, but you know.
All four?
Oh. Oh, yeah, when it was all four. God, talk about a losing tour. But we got their contract. It was, you know, sent over by the UK attorney. It was and we were only going to do the US distribution because we're US accountants. And we're looking through it, and it's a beautiful, first of all, 8.5 by 11 doesn't exist in Europe. It's like 8.5 and 13. So you got this contract coming through with the facts of 8.5, 11, then your tag of 3 or 4 lines, an 8.5, 11 tag. So we had about 70 pages of a 35-page contract, of course. And we're sitting there and we're reading it, you know, and like, oh, that's nice. Oh, that's nice. Oh, that's nice. I'm looking for the one friggin' paragraph I care about. Definition page, nothing about accounting, no terms. Accounting is blank. Most licensing agreements, by the way, you're going to see terms not defined. I'm here to tell you, you got to get terms defined. And I'm going to show you why in a real quick way. Went through the entire contract. I didn't see an accounting paragraph. I gave it to my wife, who basically is a much more detailed proofreader than I am, who is not an accountant, by the way. She's does massage therapy. You get married where you can, what can I tell you? And
accountants get
tents. I used to have hair. then I went into this field. I made a boy, what a mistake. And she couldn't find it. So I called up the UK attorney and I said, where's the auditing paragraph? He says, oh, we don't put them in. And I said, well, how do I audit? Because I can't go to the US company and say, I'm auditing under this contract if I, there's no right to audit. He said, oh, don't worry about it. Yeah, right. Called up the US company, very, very nice people. They said, great, when would you like to come in? I said, well, I'd like to come in. They said, well, before you come in, could you send us over the contract so that we can, by contract, get all the paperwork prepared for you? I said, well, we could do this two ways. I could give you the 70 some odd pages, and you're not going to find an auditing paragraph, or you just let me come in and audit. And there was a quiet on the other side. And I swear the guy had to, it was a guy, he had to be laughing his ass off. He's sitting there, he is laughing. And then he probably put me on mute because I didn't hear anything. I didn't even get music. You know, where's the music you need in life? And he comes back on and he says, well, you know, without a paragraph, I'm going to have to run it past legal if I'm even allowed to let you through the door. I said, well, you can let me through the door. You can't show me paperwork. He said, yeah. So why should you even come? I said, well, you know, come on, my kid's tuition's coming soon. let me run something up there. And we came to a conclusion that the UK attorney can deal with him until I'm allowed to get into the building and find out what I'm actually allowed to see. So these type of stories, and unfortunately they're horror stories, don't rely 100% on your legal representation. You have common sense. If you know that you're entering with an agreement with a third party and you want to make sure they're honest, you better make sure you're allowed to look at the books and records. If it doesn't say it in that agreement, okay, something's wrong. You get there, and if the entertainment attorney says, hi, how are you, you don't need it, you grab the attorney, you take one part of your hand or the other, or if you have total flexibility, because you see Zohan being advertised now on the TVs, you get your foot and you just hit him, you know, and say, get me, you know, the guy that can write the paragraph. So accountants used to be able to do review audits of this work. We no longer do review audits. Why don't we do review audits? Well, I can give you the real reason, which I'll probably give anyway. We don't like the liability. If we give you a review audit, we have a hell of a liability coming up our ass. Because if we make a mistake, if something is hidden from us that we didn't spot, okay, we're liable. Which means my malpractice insurance goes like, hi, how are you? Even though I'm doing the best job possible. So the Security Exchange Commission and the AICPA said, you know, let's take something off the accountant's back. So we now have what is called, there's no longer this type of audit for a royalty or licensing audit. It's called an agreed upon procedure audit. An agreed upon procedure audit is, first of all, the first thing is that under a general review audit, you could take that audit, if I did it for you, you could take that audit and you can go to the bank, you can go to investors, you can go to anybody you want and not use it for the purpose that it was, even though it's outlined what the purpose was, not use it for that purpose. On an agreed upon procedure audit, it is just for you. And it says it there. If you take it to the bank, and the bank gives you a loan on it, not like a review, which they could sue me, as soon as they see agreed upon audit, if the bank has enough sophistication, they're going to look and say, I can't hold the accountant on this. The bank doesn't like that. They want me into a, you know, a possible fraudulent mode. So this reduces my liability. This reduces my exposure. A couple of things, though, is I have required to be independent. So before, under review audits, I used to be able to take stock in your company. I used to be able to do contingent fees. I can't do that shit anymore. Under a certified audit, I can actually still take stock. I have no idea why. Of course, the only people that I've seen take stock is like Ernst & Young, you know, the small people, the really small company, you know, who basically, you know, don't have to do anything for a living. So if you go to an accountant with a licensing agreement and they start talking about limited review, you sit there and say, no, I want to agree to, I want to do a, you know, procedure here. And they're going to sit there and, first of all, if they don't know what you're talking about, find another accountant. Also, I got to be very honest with you. And not every accountant can do a royalty audit. They don't know what the hell to look for. You don't really want to take your, if your local accountant, after you have your agreement, has never done one, and now you want him to do one, make sure if he has the experience to do it, do not be the first one on the block. It gets ugly. It also is, also, it, you know, some accountants are great, male or female, they are great, but they have the personality of a slug, you know? And you're sitting there going, well, what do I care? He's getting the books and records out, the tax returns are coming out, so he's a slug, so, you know, I would never even let him come out in public, right? This is not somebody to send on a royalty audit, because you have to deal with other people. If he's a slug, or somebody that we could say AH, and I don't mean auction house here, this is not somebody that's going to get more records than maybe you're not entitled to. So you want somebody that has a personality, not maybe not the greatest personality, but at least one that's not going to piss everybody off as he's walking in the door. So let me go over a couple of reasons why you're auditing. Yes, ma'am.
Before you start, I came in late and I apologize. When you mean accountant, you're talking about CPA, right? Since you're talking about audits here.
A CPA is the only person that can do an audit that is recognized by the AICPA. Which, between, by the way, the AICPA, everybody says, hi, I belong to the AICPA. And basically it means shit now. Because pretty much what happened was the AICPA had power because of Financial Accounting Standards Board. Oh, well, lost one. Hug me. And they no longer write the Financial Accounting Standards Bulletins anymore. That now belongs to the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, PCAOB. So basically the AICPA is like, you belong to any organization, who gives a shit? So here are a couple of the official reasons why a company will tell you that your licensing agreement has been underreported. The licensing, engineering, or sales department may not timely communicate newly licensed products or product SKUs to the accounting department responsible for tabulating and reporting royalty sales. In other words, you got the project, you got the license, they got it, they're selling it, and oh, the licensing group forgot to tell the accounting department that that SKU is now being used and you better start tabulating it. Believe it or not, it's common. It's very common, because what has happened is it's been signed by you. You know that they're going to sign it. Production's already kicking it out. They're already putting it on the shelves and selling it. But the guy that has to sign it on the other side is away on vacation for 4 weeks. So until it gets signed off by him, nobody's sending it to the accounting department to to do anything. Of course, marketing and sales already has told the accounting department, said, hi, release me 4 SKUs that will designate the product so we can send it out. So you got a problem. It does happen more than not. How many, have you ever seen, well, here, let's do a real typical. You get a book, the book's out, person, you're getting paid royalties on the book. 5 years go by, 6 years go by, somebody calls up and says to you, hey, you know, we're going to republish that first book of yours under the old terms of the old royalty agreement. You're happier than a pig in shit. Hey, I'm going to get new royalties on an old product I thought was dead. Problem is that the old SKU number has been retired. The new SKU number has now been issued. Nobody told accounting that there's a new SKU number that's associated with an old licensing agreement. Therefore, accounting is going to make an assumption, no royalty agreement. I don't have to pay anybody. What? Here is the biggest problem I have. Some agreements, the actual licensing agreements, may allow the licensees to make judgments about deductible expenses allowed under the agreement, which means, let's use a game company, just because, why not? Game company comes out and basically says, goes to, fictitiously, I'll pick up a company, let's say EA, and EA says, hi, we're going to give you X amount of dollars, you got your milestones, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to give you 20% of the net royalty, net income, after cost of goods sold. You're sitting there going, hey, thank God I got a fucker, you know, I got money coming in so I can pay my programmers, so I can actually get the product out. And you miss this thing called cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold is a generic term. It's made up of many, many components. I could dump stuff in there like you wouldn't believe, because I can go under many, many contractual obligations. I can point to accounting text that basically contradicts normal sense. As an example, in this computer game, let's say you're going to get a disc, and you're going to get a little bit of cardboard packaging, and you're going to get a manual. Okay, these are all direct. How about the mailboy's salary is all of a sudden shot into cost of goods sold because he's basically sitting there putting letters out? Now, you see, you're shaking your head. No, if you haven't defined it, the answer is yeah.
Part of their overhead.
This is part of their overhead. This is their overhead. It's called direct and indirect costs. There's two types. Direct costs. There's your computer package, the computer disk, and the manual. Let's assume you have a paper manual. Yes, I know the manual could go on the disk. Now, all your indirect costs, selling costs, advertising costs, equipment depreciation costs. They could have just bought a machine, a $25 million machine that has absolutely nothing to do with your product, except that it stores its SKU on it. And they have the ability to allocate a certain amount of that cost of that machine to your cost of goods sold. So you're sitting there saying, okay, what's a disc? Okay, I got a disc, I got a paper, I got this, I got, okay, we're talking at best a buck. You get your first royalty statement. Sales, one unit. Let's say you only sold one unit. Why are we only selling one unit? I want my life to be easy. Sales, $6. Cost of goods sold, $5. Net profit, $1. Here's your 20 cents. Very common. You need to define cost of goods sold in your contract. And how do you define cost of goods sold in your contract? And we're going to get into that, but let me give you point one. Let me save you $100,000. Point one, cost of goods sold should be defined into your licensing agreement, and it should say cost of goods sold is defined as direct cost plus $1. Actually, I would usually say 50 cents, but they're going to try and bump it up. 50 cents of indirect costs maximum. So that, therefore, they could put everything under the sink. You don't care. Why? Because when I go in, I'm going to sit there and say, okay, your direct costs are this. Your indirect costs are limited to, by contract, 50 cents or a dollar. All this other stuff that you're showing to me does not exist. Or it exists, but I don't have to care because I got a contract. So I can ignore it. I like to ignore things. It's very good. So let's say we did it that way, and let's say you got it to 50 cents. Well, okay, I just came in, so we got $6. Now we got only $1.50 of real direct costs. We got 50 cents of indirect costs. See, I make my life easy. I told you this, right? $4. You now got 80 cents. You got 60 cents more in your pocket. Now, instead of one unit, how about if you sold 1 million units? Okay, that's $600,000. And my life was not that hard because I could sit there and point to something. Accounting system weaknesses. Yeah, sure.
Is it usually about 15% that indirect cost is limited? Is that
indirect cost? If you get in, if you're able to get into your contract that you can limit indirect costs, okay, it is a fluctuation depending on the product. By that I mean if you have a very expensive product. In other words, if they're going out and they're selling the product for $50, $100, $1,000, they're not going to limit indirect costs to 50 cents. So it really depends on the product. It depends on your industry. If you are, take a look at a book, okay? There's a lot more expenses indirectly for a book than there is for a computer game.
So the percentage of, it will fluctuate.
It will fluctuate based on your artistic endeavor and ability. But the issue that you can sit there and say is, any account, if you are, have an account that has some industry familiarity, they can tell you what your overhead's going to should reasonably be. Okay, that doesn't mean that they're going to accept it or not. But that's a bargaining position between your lawyer and their lawyer, or if you're going to do your own agreements, between you and their lawyer. Believe it or not, a lot of these systems have accounting system weaknesses, their side. They just don't know what they're doing. They basically put invoices in. He's leaving. Yeah, small group, you get harassed. That's all right. So their accounting systems have weaknesses. You have human error. So in other words, somebody's reading your contract, they're inputting it into their accounting system, they read it wrong. Oh, they missed that. Oh, you have this agreement about cost of goods sold limited. So they basically put their arbitrary number in of $5, which is if nobody does it, and it's a mathematical error. Poor inventory control. Units go out the door. Oh, I just shipped that guy 1,000 units. He got 1,500. Really good. Of course, in the back of mind, you're thinking, yeah, like he's not going to pay for 1,500 units. Yeah, I believe that. Employee theft. If you have a hot product and there is not enough security, assume that some of this stuff is going to walk out the door. And if it walks out the door, they will not pay you your royalty on it. I don't know why. Actually, I've actually argued that they should and sometimes actually win. And I think they give it to me just to get me out of the place. You know. Now, there is actually, if you deal with public companies, there is a potential for intentional understatement of sales. Because with a public company, every penny they don't have to pay you is a penny that they get on their balance sheet, which is times by a multiple, and therefore their stock price goes up. So there is an intentional. There's another way, reason why it's intentional, is sometimes the person that has your product, he gets basically incentive bonuses based on meeting certain sales and keeping certain expenses a certain way. You could be helping him make a couple of dollars. If you have international sales, and there's always a difference of rate between U.S. and international, usually from a U.S. perspective, the international rate is higher. It has to be translated back to U.S. dollars. So therefore, if they use the wrong exchange rate, then they're going to be, let's say a perfect example, let's say they sold, remember, we still got 10 units, and they basically sold it for 100 euros. Let's say you use the exchange rate of 1-to-1. So that 100 euros now gets translated to $100. It's 10 units times 5. We're back to the 5, sorry. $50, net profit $50. Guess what? You're getting $10, 20%. But if they use the correct exchange rate of $1.50, then it's not 100, it's 150, still less than 50, 100 times 20. $20 in your pocket. So these are the common areas where you get misstatements. As an aside, in this paragraph, industry norm says that between 2-5%, if the quote accountant walks in and finds between 2-5% of understated sales or understated royalty payments, the publisher pays the accountant because it's considered material enough. So why should you bear the burden? I have seen this number as high as 25%. The accountant has to find 25% error. It's an argument. They want it higher, you want it lower. At a point in time, the bottom line, though, is you want to sign the agreement and get the money up front. So you only can push so much, but there should be something in there to relieve you of that burden. You don't really need to know that. These are the things that initially, well, you could know that, but it's my procedure letter of what I send out to another firm. And you know, I've already lost two people. I'm struggling here. The documentation that I'm going to request, your agreement has to support. Your agreement has to support product numbers. What are product numbers? Product numbers are how many were friggin' produced, how many were friggin' sold. Units and sales dollars. How many sold? What U.S. dollar denomination? Currency and country, because you need to know where, and I need to know their translation, what they used. I need to know, and you'll love this, internal product usage. I need to know the, in other words, did they say, this guy has the hottest thing around, and I'm going to use him as a promo so I can sell this piece of shit. Sometimes we call that bundling, by the way. They do it, but if they do it in a promo that, hi, if you buy this piece of shit, you get this for free, right? I need to be able to grab that and grab those numbers. They need to tell me. Returns and allowances, I need to confirm and verify. You get paid if it's sold. If they come all back, it wasn't sold, you're not getting paid. But they could sit there and say, you know, that 5,000 unit, that got 100% return. If I'm not allowed to make sure about it, then we're gonna have to get into altercations. If I need the production reports. You need the production reports. If you could get in your agreement that besides the royalty agreements, they're required to give you the production reports. What's a production report? Hi there. Using a book First run, 200,000 copies. You know, first run, 200,000 copies. That's what was run off. All of a sudden, you're reading your royalty reports, and you know, you're having a bad day. The calculator has been cold. You start tabulating. You see, oh, Jesus Christ, you know, first run was 200,000 units, but they sold 350,000 units. That's what I got paid for. Where'd the other 150 come from? Did God come down and, you know, God bless you, I love this, multiply, be fruitful. You know, and the books go together, and all of a sudden they got mini books that grow up very quickly. Large print. So that would be a magnificent thing if you get that in your agreement, that your royalty agreement, your royalty report has to show within that period how many units were produced. Why? Because at the end of the day, when I go in, first thing I'm going to say, how many units do you have on hand? If you tell me, based on this audit report, that they got that they're required to send you, how many units they produced, we can both do the simple math, how many units you got paid for, it should equal what they got in hand. If it doesn't equal what happened on hand, first question, and by the way, that was the biggest thing we got them on the musicians. That was the musician order for $1 million. They couldn't account for a hunk of units. Didn't know where it went. My statement was, you sold it. My statement was, average sales price. And we did it statistically. It was a very nice graph. I can do Excel with the best of them. One of the things that you need to also discuss in this royalty agreement, if you can, your licensee royalty agreement, is your international is going to have a higher rate than your U.S. domestic. If they sell to a U.S. company that then is going to flip it all the way to Europe, and they know that it was going to Europe, and believe me, they know it was going to Europe. Okay, you need to have something there that says, hi, how are you? Indirect sales to international countries is paid at the international rate. Because, you know, if you do this very casually and you say, hi, here's my invoice that says, Taekwon Key Inc., New York, New York, they're going to say, oh, Taekwon Key Inc., U.S. company, U.S. royalty rates. And then you write a quick little letter. Hi, Taekwon King Inc. Where do you sell your product? It's Korea. A little far. Well, you know, hey, U.S. domestic sales, they have a reason for it. They get the litigation ability if the pieces of if whatever they're buying aren't bad. It's a hell of a lot easier to sell to litigate U.S. company to U.S. company than Korea company to U.S. company. So your publisher is using that ability to pay you less. So here's pretty much the real areas where you're going to find it. Unreported sales, not adhering to contract requirements. Oh, you'll love these. I'm sorry. Transactions with related parties not conducted on an arm's length basis. Anybody ever hear of a company called Take Two? Does everybody know that Take Two owns retail game outlets and sells products at a reduced rate to their retail game outlets? What? You sure? Trust me, I know this. I've had this happen. What they do is they basically say, okay, we're going to say, if it was, forget Walmart. Walmart is a special case. Walmart is, you know, it's like World of Warcraft is the MMO gorilla. Walmart is the distributor's gorilla for game people. So let's say normal selling price, which is wholesale, $20, which then turns into a $40 retail game. They sell it to their totally related own stores for $10. Because they're trying to shift the profit into the stores. two reasons. Usually the stores are losing money, so therefore they can shelter. And by the way, if they shift to $10, well, that's less royalty in your pocket. If they get caught at it, and they do great ways to hide who they're shipping to. But that's really one of the major places we'll catch them. Cost allocations that unfairly burden licensed products. For example, a combination sale. Here's a combination sale. I got one book, one piece of artwork, and a game, all combined. And the game is allocated 75% of the new selling cost. The rationale that they're using is, well, the game basically wholesales for $20, the picture wholesales for $2, and the book wholesales now for $5. Your argument is very simple, a third, a third, and a third. Their argument is, no, it's based on wholesale value. And my statement is, there is no wholesale value anymore. You combined them. There's an impossibility to break out wholesale value. And they end up basically hemming-hawing, and we settle. You ever hear free after rebate? Don't you love free after rebate? So their statement is, what's free after rebate? Well, they're saying, well, look, we sold your product for $50. We gave a $50 rebate on it. We don't owe you a penny. And you sit there and say, or actually I sit there and say, you owe me on the $50. You want to give them a rebate, that's your problem. It's not my job. You know, you want to do it for selling purposes, you want to do it for whatever. Not my problem. Not my client's problem. He created it. So therefore, you eat the rebate. Bundling is really great. I'll use an example. My wife just called me. She bought 50 games on a disc. My wife is, you know, I love my wife, but you know, it's like pinball games and things like that. I mean, my wife loved those games. God knows why. 50 of these on one disc for $10. The only one she wanted was Pac-Man. The old, historic Pac-Man. Can you picture 50 games splitting the $10, or really the $5, right? When really the one that's standing out is Pac-Man? If I went in and I saw that bundle, I'm sitting there going, don't know it, don't know it, don't know it, don't know it. Pac-Man, my client, don't know it, don't know it, don't know it, don't know it. Okay, you know what? I'll be nice. $4.95 is mine. 5 cents is everything else that you don't pay a royalty on. When, I've only seen this once, and I've been doing this now. I started out doing royalty audits 30 years ago for musicians and independent film companies. I mean, some of my best clients was Kermit the Frog. I mean, I loved him. Of course, Miss Piggy was a pain in the ass. She kept saying, oh no, we're married. I said, no, no joint return for you. I don't do interspecies. But I have seen, and I have seen this, unfortunately, where a direct cost of a movie at that time, because we're talking now about Muppet Stove Manhattan, you know, Blood Crystal. Oh, God, that was terrible. Easy Money, Dark Crystal. Dark Crystal was King Lord was. It was made in England, and then it was a joint venture between Henson and King Lord, and King Lord was UK, and he was a real pain in my fucking ass. And then Henson bought him out, and that's probably why it was fun. It was distributed by Buena Vista. Buena Vista is the Disney distribution arm. We went and took a look at their manufacturing records per the royalty audit, and we then demanded the manufacturing records and invoices and payments that they actually did, and it was night and day. What we had was fictitious, it was inflated, and what they really paid for it was quite less. I mean, to my memory, I think it was 30% less. Whereupon, of course, we adjusted cost of goods sold, and they paid the Henson organization some more money. But it was fictitious. It was maliciously done because the person that was running that division had to come in with a certain amount of profit that month, that quarter. And he did it that way. And that's pretty much, that is, hopefully that's rare in your life. Hopefully it's rare, but it can happen. And these, by the way, why I'm saying this is because your accountant should be doing this, that you're hiring to make sure. But if he doesn't do this, then you have a problem. And that's why agreed upon procedures, you're telling him, you are agreeing with your accountant what procedures need to be done, what he should be looking for. And every time you add in a procedure, he should be able to tell you or estimate how much that's going to cost you. Because you don't want to go in with a potential $50,000 accounting bill. And God forbid, you found the one publisher that was 100% honest. Boy, that would really not be good. You know, be good for me. I mean, you know, or my brethren, you know. I mean, you know, I don't, you know. What can I tell you? So pretty much that's what I give you this cute, adorable report. You know, depending how the cash flow is, it either has a nice cover or it has an eh cover, but it has a cover. It has a report. And I basically say what we did. I outline all the procedures that I did. And I basically put down if I find an exception to it. If I find an exception to it, I then at the next level of the report, calculate what you're owed and then give it to you. We then walk in to whoever is your licensor, and there's a bit of a banter. If it's a very cursory report, they want this settled. They'll give you your money. Why? Because they don't want someone as obnoxious as I am to walk in and dig more, because there may be more money. As well as the other side issue of, you have friends in the industry that are probably using the same publisher. If they're doing it to you, they've got to be doing it to them. And I'll give you a war story. I was I did an audit for an artist. And artists are great. I mean, I enjoy them. You know, of course, I enjoy pretty much everybody. And we went in, and they had licensed the product, and the licensing of that product, I couldn't find any errors. I couldn't find anything going on. I said, this doesn't make sense to me. I mean, these two guys that run the company, they're not exactly what I would call like straight tie, white shirt, you know, and they're making me try and make me feel too comfortable. Which means that something's wrong. I mean, somebody that makes me feel comfortable, it's gotta be wrong. And I'm sitting there going, I'm going through the production reports, and the artist's work was being put on a garment. And I'm going through the production reports, I'm going through the inventory and sales, I said, wait a minute, I'm missing about 350,000 units. And they said, they were seconds. I said, okay, they were seconds. And by the way, in the agreement it said they did not get paid on seconds, which was fine. And I said, well, what did you do with the seconds? And they said, what do you mean, what did we do with them? I said, well, 350,000 units, that's a lot of friggin' seconds. I mean, can you show me a rag or two that I can say, you know, that you're using them for rags? And I said, oh, no, we don't have them for rags. I said, okay, what are you doing with the seconds? They said, oh, well, we put them in our seconds warehouse. I said, and what do they do in the seconds warehouse? Oh, we sell them as seconds. And I said, and where are my royalty payments? You know, I don't mind that you sold it for less than what, I don't care. Come on. And they said, well, our real cost of goods sold, you agree, and we usually sell it for equal to that or maybe a couple bucks. And I said, if you called them seconds, you wrote off the cost of goods sold. You allocated all to my guy already on the first. So all these seconds are free. They have no cost associated to them. They're all profit to you. They said, yeah. I said, where's my royalty? And we found that, we then found out that they were selling them to related parties. So really what they were really selling, they were actually selling them at fairs. And they would basically sell them at fairs, and these people were paying a dollar less than what first quality was. They called them second quality, not seconds. And so my client got royalty payments on the 350,000 units. He was happy. That company wasn't too happy, but, you know, but that's not my problem. So these are the horror stories. Yes, sir.
The company be fined for something like that, or charges?
They were fined in the sense that they had to pay the royalty payments and they had to pay interest. All right, and that's another thing that you should put in to your contract. If I find something, if somebody finds something, there's interest. Because you had the loss of the money and they had the use of the money. What the interest is, it's a question. See, one of the problems, there's two issues here about doing an audit, is that one is that in certain industries, there are very few publishers left. So therefore, you don't want to be a hard ass on the publisher, but it's still your money. So you have to kind of weigh it. Personally, I've never seen anyone that got, anyone that has hired me, that I've done an audit for, I have never seen that publisher come back and say to that creative person, not to me, me, they say, you know, don't show up at our cafeteria again, we'll kill you. But I've never seen the publisher go and say, I want your product, I want your music, I want your game, I want A, B, C, D, but because you audited me, I'm not signing a contract. I've never seen that in my life. I have seen finding a lot of money with the potential of finding more, and the artist business manager, the creative person's business manager saying, I'm happy with what you found. That's a cost-benefit rule, okay? And I can respect that. Of course, I'm sitting there going, I found you $1 million, and, you know, it's, and they're paying my first fee, you know? It's found money, give me 10%, you know, give me, budget me up to 100,000, and trust me, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna find just a couple more shekels in the bag. But those are things. The last thing I'm gonna tell you is, a lot of times you have a contract that terminates. A lot of times that contract will terminate and they're still paying you royalties. Why? Because they're still selling the product and they're making money. Trust me, if they're selling, if they can make money, they're going to sell your product. You got to write them a letter. You got to put something in file extending it with the same terms. The other thing is they usually come in and you see in the paragraph, you have the right to audit the last 3 years. No, not really. You have the right to audit the entire friggin' thing. And by the way, sometimes they've waived the 3-year paragraph. Sometimes I win, sometimes I lose. It depends. You know, if it's a really tight contract, they'll sit there, you know. And the other thing is, if I find you $1 million and they're sitting there arguing with you, the next step is litigation. And the problem with litigation is you have to hire an attorney. An attorney is going to cost a hell of a lot more than me to get your $1 million. An attorney can sit there and say, hey, to get this done in this court system at this time, it can cost you up to $500,000. And you go back to the publishing company and say, what can we settle with? $750? You know, you already know it's going to cost you $500,000 to collect. So if you get $500,000, you're up there. You made your $500,000, and you don't pay the lawyer. You go for $750, you kind of split it, make some more money in your pocket. But it all becomes negotiations. And by the way, I'm going to be very honest with you, once this audit gets done, you'll be signing a confidentiality agreement with the licensor, licensee. Why? He doesn't want you to tell your friend, "Hi, you know what? I hired the guy over there, and he found me this amount of money." Therefore, he's going to hire and say, "Go find me the money." You know, they don't want that out. They want, you know, hey, whatever they can keep in their coffers, they want. Yes, sir.
What are some red flags that you need to keep?
You'll see red flags when 95% sales U.S., 5% international. That's kind of a red flag for me. I mean, from a product perspective, when you get your royalty reports, you'll get a royalty. Royalty report will say country, units, average selling price, cost of goods sold, net income, royalty rate here, and then you have a draw, how much they prepaid you, and the net amount. It'll just keep going down. If you never see anything or a lot of things, you know, internationally, not that much international, you got a problem. If your cost of goods sold looks outrageous to you, if you can call up somebody and say, if I gave you this to do this, this, and this, and they come in and say it's going to cost you $3 and you're being charged $5, okay, and you're not getting quantity discounts, yeah, that's something you got to take a look at. And then you also have a feel. Let's say you're an author, and on your page, you take a look and you say 80% of the people that are emailing me are from Europe and 20% of the people that are emailing me are from the United States, and why isn't my royalty report so reflective? Because no matter what, U.S. people are not that, U.S. and Europe people are equally non-verbose. Mm-hmm. They're not going to pick up and write you. It's not like, hi, I got 1,000 people writing that read my book because I got 1,000 people on my blog. No, that's not right. It's 1,000 people that said, I really loved your work or hated your work, and I responded to you. But if you have that type of thing, you got a problem. And at the end of your contract, you should audit anyway. Because at the end of your contract, depending on how much money you actually got, that's how much you could be getting back more. But then it becomes an economic issue, because what happens if they were clean? Are you willing, do you have whatever the accountant's going to charge to pay for the audit? Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Is there anything like a production report for electronic distribution? Anything that can take that role? Any way to really see what's been sent out electronically? Just the books, just the reports of it?
Everything can be. They will never prepare it for you. You would have to require it, and they would charge you. But it's very easy. I mean, all of it, it's a data mining. You know, I mean, everything is stored in some type of electronic format.
They're keeping track of it.
They're keeping track of it based
on which set of books you're looking at.
Right.
Well, they're keeping track based on their SKUs. Right. So all they have to do is pull up an SKU by report, which is really easy to do, and kick you out everything. But they're not going to do it for a couple of reasons. I mean, they can do it, but they won't. First of all, they're going to argue customer proprietary information, because you're going to see every customer they sell to. And with that will be a name, an address, and a phone number. And they don't want you to have that stuff.
Is there anything else special about electronic distribution to look out for in audit reports? I mean, obviously COGS is supposed to go out the window, but it doesn't.
Right. Well, let's put it this way. COGS, if you've done it right, COGS basically over time should go down. Because what used to cost X amount of dollars today, 3 years from now is not going to cost that much. And there's no way that they can sit there and they can say, well, you know, we did the first run of your thing and we ran 1 million copies. And we're finally getting done with that. And our next million, which will happen 5 years. Wait a minute, you sold the first 1 million the first 3 months, you know. Give me a break. Yeah. But then you get into my job. Yeah. if you have all the things I outlined that should be in the agreement, 90% of my work you can do. And then you make a determination if you want to do it or not. I mean, I should be the last step, you know, because hopefully they're honest and you're able to spot it. But at times, they're going to sit there. If you're not that important in their business structure, they're not going to waste time on you. If they have, if they've done one project with you and they've gotten three more out there and they're all selling like hotcakes, they're going to want to keep you happy. If they've taken your one or two projects and you're waiting for the third, they're going to make you sit on the fence a bit. Any other questions? Any other comments? I can do a song and dance routine.
Want to read the procedure letter? Want to read the procedure letter?
Sure. What I'm required to do is I'm required to review classifications, categories, product line, and retail price. I'm required to secure and review accounting records, including sales data, royalties, inventory, production, prior audit reports, and licensing agreements. I'm required to review royalty reports for inclusion of proper data, obtain support for payments made by the licensee, agree to reported royalty on royalty statement. I'm required to review minimum guarantees and verify accuracy. Review, this is, by the way, my checklist of what I use. Review licensee system for recording sales, develop testing procedures to verify all units have been recorded, prepare a roll forward of inventory units, review inventory adjustments, review cutoff procedures, review exchange rates, determine sales trends, volumes, products line mix, test for variances of licensees suggested retail list prices by calculating the actual base average price reflected in royalty reporting, actual dollars divided by actual units. Test prices to sales invoices, recalculate royalty base prices, review negative sales, oh, that's a cue. Recompute taxes if deducted and verify they are held in escrow to ensure the amount is proper and payments to the taxing entities are actually made. I mean, yes, they'll charge sales tax and then they'll just never pay it to somebody. And therefore you sit there and say that's not sales tax, that's an additional sales revenue. Because the sales invoice has to match the sales journal. If you catch a sales journal and the sales journal doesn't equal the gross sales because they're sitting there saying, well, we're not showing you the sales tax that we charged, you just sit there and rip them a new one. Their sales journal includes sales tax. Your royalty report includes sales tax. And yes, I'm being perfect. They got cost of goods sold. If they're including sales tax, they are allowed to deduct sales tax. Why? Because it's not their money. But then I'm required to make sure they actually paid it. Personally, if you sell to a wholesaler or a retailer who's going to sell to the public, I don't know any state that charges a sales tax or a use tax on that product. So I really would be curious to see it. There is a VAT tax, but you know, that then you get into real issue. You know, they get a VAT tax, but if they don't have it, but then they're going to take the VAT tax they paid and use it against their total gross VAT tax that they have to file. So they're in essence taking your money and offsetting against their bill for future or different products. So therefore, then that has to get you to a calculation. I mean, if they got the VAT tax, if they paid the VAT tax, what would we care? But usually they don't, they offset it. Because 90% of these guys have some type of VAT organization, European. I mean, India just accepted the VAT tax. I mean, we're the only ones that are sitting there with no VAT tax. God knows why we should actually it's been proposed we do accept a VAT tax. Any other questions? Any other answers?
I just wanted to ask you to elaborate a little bit more. And I don't know if you want to record or anything, but you're saying CPAs will no longer either come out of the AICPA or other people other than CPAs will be able to do audits in the future.
Okay, first of all, let's correct a misnomer. The AICPA is a national organization. CPAs are licensed by the state. So the AICPA never CPAs never came from the AICPA. All the AICPA did was create an exam that the states administered, and if you passed the exam, then the states would license you. The AICPA went from a membership of, let's see, the SEC part, which was the one that really paid, I mean, dues to belong to the SEC section of the AICPA was $20,000, okay? They went from, I think my friend told me they went from 10,000 people paying dues to 5. So the AICPA really is a defunct organization, and really from a public accounting perspective or something of this nature, really I'm looking to the people that are writing the financial accounting standards bulletins, and that is now the public company, Public Corporation Accounting Oversight Bureau, which is called the PCAOB, which was actually created by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which came about because Enron went bust. You know, and Arthur Anderson died. That is why I would say the AICPA is a, you know, it really hasn't. Never had to. I haven't belonged to the AICPA for years. Yeah, I belonged to the state. All I cared about was my state organizations.
Where are you from?
I am in New Hampshire, and I have offices in New York. Why do I live in New Hampshire? It's a hell of a lot nicer than New York. It's also a hell of a lot cheaper than New York. Any other questions, comments, answers, responses? Still say we could have done this one at the barn. We're done.
Thank you very much. All right.